Hello, and welcome to Lady Radio CITR 1019, where we are broadcasting live from the unceded ancestral lands of the Musqueam people. Today we are talking about women in film, and more specifically the underrepresentation of women and people of color in the exhibition and production of films. To start us off, we have an interview with Jillian Gerst by our lovely Dora Duber, followed by a roundtable discussion about women's role and representation in the industry.
Today, throughout this episode of Lady Radio, we will be and have been talking about women in film and their place in the creative process and representations and kind of women in media culture in general. I recently had the amazing opportunity to interview Jillian Gerst from the Toronto-based group Drunk Feminist Films. Drunk Feminist Films, or DFF, DIFF as I call it, basically screens movies, provides alcohol, and then critiques the gender, sexual, racial, classist representations within these films. And all the events are very fun. The women who are involved are so creative and amazing. Interviewing Jillian was such a stressful time for me because I was just fangirling the whole time. But besides creating this really amazing organization and kind of cultural event in Toronto, she also happens to be an incredibly nice and intelligent person. I was blown away. DFF is a passion project of a group of 12 women in Toronto. And she described it beautifully when she said, "We are not film people, we are culture people," which really encapsulates, I feel, what Drunk Feminist Films is about. It's not about how the film is made. It's not about getting women in film out there. It's about looking at women and their representations in film. So here is that interview. Enjoy. So, Drunk Feminist Films is a collective of feminists who would rather laugh than cry their way through representations of gender in Hollywood films. Would you mind talking a little bit about, like, how you came up with that whole concept and, like, that wording especially?
Yeah, actually, we've actually expanded the little, I don't know what we call it, a mission statement, a manifesto. We expanded it because it's not just gender. We're also talking about class, race, bodies, and other aspects of identity. So we do have a more expanded one now, but it's a bit of a mouthful. But I mean, that is a thing when you're trying to be as inclusive as possible. And if you want all these voices to be heard, sometimes you wind up with a lot of words. So we leaned in, laughed at my own joke. So talking about that, I guess what Drunk Feminist Films really aims to do is to create an environment where people, not just women, people of all gender identities, men included, and non-binary, non-gender identifying folks, can get together and, like, kind of commiserate. It's about having a shared laugh about how brutal sometimes everything is. And there's appreciation, too, particularly with media and Hollywood films. Obviously, that's our focus. But so many people have a lot of deep, like myself included, have deep nostalgia for movies that we grew up with. But often when you revisit these movies, they don't actually hold up well to a second glance or an adult eye or a feminist lens. So you're watching, you know, movies that you grew up with and adored and that, you know, feel like they're a part of you in this way that only things you watch when you're younger can be. And then you find out that they're terrible to women, or that there's not a single person of color in a whole movie that's set in the South or whatever, you know, like, or set anywhere for that matter. But a lot of these things tend to leap out the more you learn and the more you grow as a person and the more your worldview expands. So it can often be hard and disheartening to watch these beloved, cherished films and realize that they don't hold up. So, you know, how does that reflect on your view of yourself? If this is something that you love deeply and now you're looking at it and realizing that it's problematic, it can be a little earth-shattering. And this is a place where everybody can get together in a room and groan and high-five and boo at the screen and kind of just express their feelings about that in this really fun environment.
Something I noted in your response was that you were looking at movies from, like, the past, which I found really interesting. I was just kind of, like, going through movies that you've screened, and a lot of them were, like, high school movies. And I was wondering if that was, like, a conscious decision that you made. And then also because Fifty Shades, that event got so much kind of, like, media coverage, if you'll think that it'll affect your programming or targeted audience in any way.
I mean, I think what our goal is maybe not specifically high school movies or movies even from our past, but movies that are really a part of the cultural landscape. 50 Shades really kind of rocked the world in a lot of ways. Suddenly, news anchors were having to use the word BDSM and having to know what it meant, which was not the case before that movie came out. So that one really created, in many ways, a seismic shift. And because it was such a problematic depiction of BDSM, it got a lot of conversations really going. I mean, that's how we initiated our relationship with Review Cinema in Toronto, is one of our Drunk Feminist Films members had sat on a panel for one of their, like, interactive screenings, and she knew that that Steph was a part of Drunk Feminist Films, and so asked her if maybe we'd be interested in doing 50 Shades, because, I mean, you've got these lovely theaters, particularly in Toronto, and in centers like Vancouver, too, where you've got beautiful art house cinemas that are struggling to make ends meet or running on volunteers and are trying to find ways to bring people out. And they wanted to, like, obviously cash in on 50 Shades, but without selling out. So how can you do that? How can we show this movie and do so in a way that's true to the theater's mandate? And this idea of this negotiated viewing really worked out beautifully. And, I mean, the event sold out in, like, 1 second. We were stunned. We had no idea how it would go. And we really tried our best to create a situation that was not lending to the negative side of the conversation. So we got a BDSM expert to come and do a talk to really set the stage. We weren't here to shame the characters for their choices, but to actually talk about, you know, the structural stuff in this movie that made it so problematic, like the conflation of emotional abuse and BDSM. It's like, no. Let's actually talk to somebody from the BDSM community and talk about how aftercare is a thing and what how much trust has to be in that relationship that the Christian Grey character is constantly undermining, removing it kind of from the realm of BDSM in a healthy way. So it ended up being hilarious, too. I mean, add a drinking game to the mix, and suddenly you've got a bunch of really relaxed people who are having a great time. It was awesome. Drinking's optional, obviously, but, I mean, it for sure helps to loosen everybody up.
By, like, initially incorporating alcohol in the events and, like, the culture by identifying kind of as drunk feminist, do you find that limiting in the kind of, like, events that you can hold and the kind of audience that you can have?
I mean, yeah, we acknowledge that by having drunk in the title, for sure, we're not for everybody. I mean, both my parents came from religions that don't drink and, like, strictly don't drink. So, I mean, even my family would be alienated from this type of event, and that's not the only faith or belief system that excludes alcohol. So, I mean, that is something that's maybe not going to be for everybody. It's definitely how we started out and how we want to remain for now. The idea of the drunk part isn't so much about actually drinking alcohol as not taking ourselves so seriously. We're bringing levity to a serious topic. It's a way of signifying to people who come out to this event that it's not going to be an academic panel discussion, which there's a time and a place for those, and those are an incredibly valuable part of feminist discourse, I think. But the people, like, I mean, a lot of our people are involved really heavily in that kind of discourse. This is sort of like their feminist night off. You know what I mean? You can take a night off from the heavy thinking part of it and from the incredible stressful emotional burden that talking a lot about these issues brings up, and sort of take the night off, laugh about it. It's, again, commiserate is the word that keeps leaping to mind, where, you know, after a big heavy day of, you know, talking about the ways that we can do society better, you want to hang out with some like-minded people. And if even if you're not drinking alcohol, we try to incorporate call-outs or have noisemakers or have something you can wave so that even if you're not interested in drinking alcohol, you can just participate with your whole self and kind of cut loose. But for some people, that's drinking. For some people, it's screaming at the top of your lungs at a picture on a movie screen. But it's definitely not an all-ages event. And I think that's okay. I think we definitely don't need it to be for everybody.
How do you, like, come up with the drinks themselves? Is it just, like, you have stuff in your house and you're like, this'll work?
Yeah, I mean, some of it is that. And we've got, like, some really creative people in our group. We just fluked out from the get-go in terms of putting the group together it was just like, oh, we have an embarrassment of riches here. Everybody's got some incredibly powerful stuff to bring to the table in terms of their just ability. Like, I mean, I do the graphic design and stuff, so it's very convenient to have a me on hand. But, like, Amy, right off the bat, is just, like, a PR wizard and a social media genius. And Steph, an incredibly apt person, was coming up with cocktails. Both Steph and Amy really bring their creativity into the drink mixing forum. And Shauna's got her master's in women's studies, so she's got the academic side and has all these university connections. And it's just, like, I mean, that's the core four. And since then, we've expanded. We've got 12 people now. And they're even more mind-blowing. Just the amount of extra abilities that all these powerhouse people bring to the table means that we're rarely scrambling to come up with ideas. Usually it's like, how do we pare the ideas down? And that's to do with drinks, to do with drinking game rules, to do with movie choices. Like, there's just an incredible talent pool that we're working with. So, and I mean, we all get along so awesome and call each other out on our
oops.
And it's just, it's awesome. It's really, really great.
Could you just talk about the origin of Diff?
Yeah, it started with me. I mean, it sort of did, but there's not a person involved in the group that this couldn't have happened without. So originally, I have a bit of a sick obsession with Twilight. It's so bad, but it's a real page-turner, and a friend gave me the book for Christmas before the movies even came out, and I was just like, this is horrifying, and I will not stop reading it. And then the movie came out, and it's a car crash, right? You can't look away from it.
Yeah.
There's so many things that are wrong with it. I mean, their relationship is actually 100% checks every box of the emotional abuse checklist. And this is, like, the great love story of the 2000s. Like, yeah. Give me a break. So I really thought that the movie in particular, with all of its hype, really deserved a feminist read. And I like coming up with, like, things that make a party fun. I've got a real weakness for getting together with a bunch of people and, like, playing a game or doing some sort of uniting activity. And a drinking game is always really fun. So I made a feminist drinking game, which you can still find it maybe. I have a dead Tumblr somewhere. They're called the Feminist Twilight Drinking Game. And so I brought over the original four founders to my house to beta test this drinking game just as a fun activity. And I knew everybody, but they didn't all know each other. And by the end of the movie, we were all feeling very warm in the cheeks because we drank a lot of alcohol. And we'd been having so many laughs. It was just like A-plus zingers flying around. And Shauna said, this is kind of like drunk history. Like, what if we videotape this? And Steph has a huge internet connection, like a social network, you might call it, and got online. And a bunch of people were like, yes, yes, that's such a funny idea. And, like, all four of us were in, and Steph's such an amazing organizer of people. So, like, within a week, she's like, hey, I'm following up on this idea that we talked about. Let's do it. And it was like, okay, yeah, no, we're actually going to do this. Then we made a web series. And then after that, we were like, oh, you know, right off the gate, we were really concerned. Because at first, it was just, like, pals hanging out, doing something for fun. But once you start to put stuff online and put the word feminist on it, we really wanted to be representative of the feminism that we believe in and that we wanted to see in the world. So the fact that it was four white women didn't sit well with us from the get-go. So expanding the cast and moving into screening rooms so that we're not the only voices in the room. We're opening the living room up to whoever wants to come out and very much encouraging their voices in the process. I mean, we do provide a drinking game in the theater. Like, everybody gets a program with all the rules written in it. But it's very much a living document, and we invite people to live tweet the event. So we'll keep up with Twitter, and people will shout out or tweet in extra rules as they think of them. And by the end of it, it's just like everything is a rule. And everyone's shouting, and everyone's having a great time, and everybody's participating in the conversation. So we're pretty happy with how it's shaping up. Well, Steph and Amy are both really, like, kind of PR community builder type people. So they have a strong social media following that really, I think, initially definitely helped kickstart a following in Toronto, especially among feminist communities, so that, you know, other feminists were aware that this was happening and able to come out. I mean, we don't do much by way of marketing. It's like we put up a Facebook event, and that's kind of enough with how powerful the Toronto feminist market is. not market, but community.
And like, the harvest.
Yeah, it's a pretty powerful community. And then once people start to hear that it's just a fun event, suddenly other people, you know, word of mouth starts to spread. And then suddenly we added another screening and went to Kitchener, and it's been really good so far. Mixing humor and feminism can be a little dicey because, I mean, there is something in that desire to create change that is so earnest that often you have to be really careful with sarcasm because, I mean, like anybody's learned, sarcasm on the internet is often very hard to read. So it's a tight line to walk, which is why we talk so much about a lot of the rules that we make. It's a tightrope, but it's a really fun one to walk with a group of people that really are supportive of each other.
I noticed also that you guys had a lot of social media platforms, like Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, YouTube, like you're all over. Was that an intentional choice and like a part of your almost branding in a way to be like, we are very available, we are very accessible?
I feel like we started with a Tumblr because we were just doing web series and we had YouTube. So we already had YouTube and Tumblr. And then once we started doing events at the Review, we knew we needed a little bit more of an anchored place to be in terms of selling tickets and letting people know about the event. So like starting a Facebook page was sort of the next obvious step. We kind of actually leaned away from doing Instagram, but then we kept wanting to have Instagram contests and wanting to see people's pictures from events. So it's just like, I mean, all of us use social media quite a lot. So it was just a natural progression to add Drunk Feminist Films versions of all the different social media platforms. It's a mixed age group in our little group. So, I mean, especially like, particularly Steph and Amy are very active in all the different platforms. So it's just like, well, this is where a lot of young people exist. This is where a lot of people exist, regardless of their age. So, you know, if that's where people are able to find us best, then we ought to be there.
Well, it's certainly working.
Yeah, so far so good. I mean, we're actually working with one of our members to build a new website so that we have, you know, kind of a single home that has arms out to the other social media platforms. But we're working on it. Yeah, I found that 2016 is so busy for everybody. I don't know if other people out there are experiencing it, but like, it's just been shot out of a cannon. Everybody's slammed right now. So sneaking the Drunk Feminist Film stuff in is actually more of a challenge than it's ever been this month. But it's all great news. It's like all these talented people are suddenly getting recognized and like having jobs pour in and you know, getting promoted at work or being given more responsibility. It's, yeah, I don't know, 2016 is kind of exciting so far.
So Drunk Feminist Films is not your like job.
No. This is very much something that people are donating their beautiful spare time to. So yeah, so it's an extra challenge to try and work it all out with everybody.
I did not know that. That's cool.
Yeah. Not a job. We try our best to give people honoraria and the like, but it's not no one's getting rich from this at this time. It's very much a passion project.
I don't know if you could tell. I was kind of fangirling at the beginning. I was like, oh my God, it's happening.
No, that's the best. That's so cool. It's a really funny thing to, I don't know, just to have this thing. It happened so organically. It definitely was not like, okay, we're going to create something and it's going to be in a theater and this is when people are going to come to it and we're going to go and get them. Like, it just kind of rolled out really naturally, which tells me that it's something that people really want. It's not anything that we've generated and are trying to kickstart or force down people's throats, but it just happened on its own. So, you know, it's our job to kind of feel out where it wants to go as a project and try and make some space for it as it needs to change, or who even knows? Who knows what it'll look like in a year, in 5 years?
And how organic it is really shows in your videos and your events. Like, it's just kind of like, this is something that's fun that, like, we thought was cool. Yeah. Everyone else will think it's cool.
But, yeah, I thank you for saying that. And I'm so glad to hear that comes through because it's very much the essence of it. It's so much fun.
I only have, like, a couple questions left for you. The biggest one, I guess, is I also noticed that a lot of the films that you screen are made by women, like Mean Girls, Bridesmaids, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and even Twilight. Was that a conscious choice or just because women make movies about women?
You know, a little from column A, a little from column B. It was a funny thing. We decided to do Fast Times and Clueless as a double feature, and I was IMDBing trivia about it, about the movies, and only then did I realize they were directed by the same person. At the end of the day, we're not, like, super film buff. We've been approached by a few people who are like, oh, I've made a short film. And I'm like, yay, awesome. Good for you. We're not the people to talk to about it. We're not like film people. We're culture people. We're people who exist in the world and take in movies in the way, like in sort of a normalized way. And unfortunately, it means that we're not an awesome forum for new material. Like, oh, if someone's made some amazing, interesting, beautiful film and wants to let it grow and wants a platform for it, that's not really us. Our deal is more like, what's something that's already on your mind? What's something that you grew up with? What's something that's a part of popular culture right now that everybody's talking about that deserves a second glance or a more critical look? And that's kind of more where we come in. So our very first screening before we were in an official theater was Mean Girls. And then the next one we did still outside of the theater was The Craft. And we're like, these are both movies about four girls who are friends and then have a bunch of like inner turmoil. And we're like, we should definitely do Clueless later, because that's another one with like three or four girlfriends. They're all like kind of in high school age and blah, blah, blah. There's just these weird parallels. I mean, I feel like we have to do Heathers at some point, because it's just like four high school girlfriends, yada, yada, yada.
People would faint. There would be just mayhem.
Oh, so good, right? Such an amazing movie. For sure, we'll do it. We'll obviously do it.
I was just talking to my sister about, I was like, oh my gosh, like, I don't know what I'm going to ask. One of the things she mentioned, she was like, a lot of them are like girls hanging out and like a lot of like internalized girl on girl kind of like conflict.
While, yeah, for sure.
Like 50 Shades, I think that's the one that like kind of stood out the most, was more like outside of that world and like introducing men into that spectrum of turmoil almost.
Totally. Well, it's an interesting non-coincidence with Twilight and with 50 Shades, since obviously they're based off of each other, that one of the first things that happens in this abusive relationship is this lead woman is alienated from her friends or doesn't have any friends. Suddenly there's no other women for her to tell her experience to, which means the only reflection of herself she gets is in this man's eyes who has an agenda. And it's just like, ugh. I thought so frequently in both movies, if she just had a female friend, like had a best friend, all this
Oops.
Would not be happening right now. Because, I mean, that would be a friend to be like, hey, you're sure spending a lot of time with this guy who doesn't seem to want to let you do the things you want to do. Maybe that's a problem.
What's weird in 50 Shades is like she has a friend, but like she's just like
and that
not there.
Good, actually, too. But that friend's pretty also like immediately starts having sex with Christian's way more awesome brother? Is that his brother?
Yeah, I think so.
I can't remember. It's all a blur. And it's like, and then they're off on their own. So it's like, once you've got a relationship, then you're probably not spending time with your friends anymore.
You're
like,
out.
Remember that scene where Christian Grey makes her leave the bar because she's drinking and dancing?
Yes!
I was just like, hell no. You tried to kick me out of the bar when I was dancing? That's end of days. You're done. That's a deal breaker.
End of relationship forever.
Oh my God, stop me from dancing? Be gone. No, thank you.
What's also like weird about 50 Shades is like she has never had like a relationship before. It's like this
oh
is like
goodness.
Her first thing.
It's going to happen all on his terms.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, so this is your first relationship. Okay, so this guy's just going to be the rule setter in every way. And you don't have a previous experience to check this against. That movie is the worst.
I'm getting heated.
And it was so fun to talk about it with pro-BDSM, healthy BDSM people who were like, oh my God, these scenes could have been so hot, except this guy's so gross and such a creep.
That's beautiful.
And at every turn, he's undermining her ability to like experience trust and power. And it's just like, ugh. It was really reassuring to hear these people being like, yeah, this is not what healthy submission looks like. This is not what a healthy sub and dom relationship is. I'm like, okay, cool, great, glad, thank you.
I read this whole long thing by like a BDSM expert that was like just going off, like 50 Shades is absolutely ridiculous, it's so problematic, and I was like,
oh, yeah.
Thank you, I'm not like the only one.
I feel like BDSM people hate that movie because
like more than anyone else.
Well, more than anybody, because it's propagating this idea of like, ooh, kink is gross and sick, and like if you're into that then you are being emotionally abused. And it's like, no, that's not the case, that's not how it is. We try to have on Tumblr, we've called it a sober second thought, or we'll have some resources that relate to the screening, because the screenings are lots of fun and aren't necessarily the appropriate place to like get into some of the heavy truths behind a lot of this stuff. Like, we didn't open our Twilight screenings with, let's talk in a heavy way about emotional abuse and how horrible it is. But there is a true element to it. So usually the next day, or we'll post it that night on the Tumblr, we'll have a bunch of resource links. So here's a distress line. Here's an article about how to tell whether you're being emotionally abused, why women sometimes get into emotional abusive relationships, and men too, and people of all genders, and how to identify, how to get out of it, how to find support. So we try to bring the necessary resources to the table in a way that's not too oppressive. If you learn something from these screenings, awesome. But we're here to commiserate, not to pedantically teach.
And that's such a great use of your platform as well.
It's a strange thing to have a platform such as it is. It's not anything that we were really looking for, but if you've got it, it's how can we do our best to not abuse it and to be as fruitful? That's the word that comes to mind. To be as fruitful with it as possible.
I have one last question for you.
Sure.
Just as a Vancouverite, would you guys ever think about expanding outside the Kitchener-Toronto area and bringing it over to different parts of Canada or internationally?
Oh, God, we'd love to. I think that definitely is a goal for us down the line. Because our work is largely unpaid, we definitely would need to work that aspect of it out. But, theaters out there, Vancouver, New York, Montreal, bring us out. We want to come. That's absolutely a goal. It'd be so much fun for us to travel out there. But, it is a thing. We've had some people inquire about, oh, can I host a screening under the DFF name? And, that's not something that we're going to get behind, especially because as soon as you put feminism, the name feminist, in something, it's up for scrutiny from both friends and foes of feminism, as it should be. So we spend a huge amount of time talking and considering and making sure that, to the best of our ability, that our politics are on board with what we're doing and that we're not creating a space for the crappy side of humanity to flourish. We want it to be a fun, feminist, but politically soundscape. For that reason alone, we're not going to let other people use our name because we can't monitor other people's politics. We can't make sure that they're creating inclusive spaces, the likes of which that we would do. We can't be sure that other people are taking the time to be as inclusive as we're trying to be. And we're not perfect either, which is part of the reason having our expanded cast is so awesome, because we've got new voices on board. We've got people to check us if something's not quite right. And we've been checked before and learned from it, which is so awesome. It's so awesome to have constructive criticism from people who really care and from people who want you to help them grow. At the end of the day, it's about building friendships and building connections between people.
Wow. Okay, well, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you so much. This has been a delight.
You're welcome. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Tune in every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. for A Little Bit of Soul with your host, Jade Park. A Little Bit of Soul plays primarily old recordings of jazz, swing, big band, blues, oldies, and Motown.
Passionate, playful, and provocative storytelling. Theater at UBC's upcoming show, The Arabian Nights, by acclaimed playwright Mary Zimmerman, is being directed by Evan Frame and running from March 17th to April the 2nd at the Frederick Wood Theater. The narrative centers around Scheherazade's tales told to King Shahryar in hopes that she may live another night. Or 1001 nights.
What better way to end off a week-long fun drive than with a kick-ass party? On March 4th, join us at the Hindenburg on West Cordova from 8 p.m. to 2 a.m. for a night-long celebration of all your support and commitment to community radio. It's one rad night you won't want to miss. We've got a silent auction, CITR DJ spinning, and the launch of Pop Alliance Volume 4 with Mint Records. To help us launch the album, we've got Morning Coup, Stefana Fratila, Late Spring, Aura Kogan, Ace Martins, Jerk Jails, and Kelt Babies, coming to perform for you. Tickets are $10 online or $12 at the door. For tickets and info, check out CITR on Facebook.
Welcome back to Lady Radio. The first song you heard was Party by Saint Vincent. This next song we're going to play is called Cybernetic Armor by Samus, and this is both, these are both FemCon artists.
This is the story of a lost little girl growing into a woman in search of love and acceptance across the universe. The only thing she's ever been attached to is a cybernetic power suit with an arm cannon. Welcome to Metroid. Welcome to Metroid. Yo, even E.T. could phone home. No, it wasn't easy. The Chozo had to intervene. I was three, seen my folks croak. So they took me to Zeeb, seized my old clothes. I started rocking a power suit. It stuck to my body. I learned how to embarrass whoever chose to get rowdy. But I wanted my parents there so that they could have taught me. I wanted all of their knowledge in place of those who adopted. I tried to forget the two, but that couldn't stop me. Like I fell with no parachute from the roof to the lobby. I got mad I had attitude at the things that I had to do. Got a little salty, stop believing in commie. Yeah, it's like I never knew if they hated or if they loved me. Started to assume things about them like they a subtweet. So I took it the hardest. God had broken my heart. It's tough to part it when he clumsy. Yeah, I would give up on my cybernetic armor if I could be a daughter. If I had my mother and my codec, I would call her. I barter at the altar, trying to bother God to talk with mama and my father. Yeah, I would give up on my cybernetic armor if I could be a daughter. If I had my mother and my codec, I would call her. I barter at the altar, trying to bother God to talk with mama and my father. Yeah. When I got older and stronger, I had to leave home. Yeah, bounty hunting was calling, I heard that ringtone. Every single time I was sparring, I took the rings. Those other niggas ain't got a thing on me except the ding-dong. I often wonder the reasons I'm who I am. I thought about it, it seems I'm beginning to understand. Outer space is the origin of life for every human. When I'm orbiting in flight, it's like a family reunion. It's no complaints, I dig my gig, it's really opportune. I love the pace, it keep me busy making constant moves. Traversing space to other cities, call me Doctor Who. It would be impossible to find a better job to do, but the fact remains I got issues I'm trying to change. Not having my mama hair in the picture might help explain why I travel around the galaxy battling, trying to find a lead on something with a name like Mother Brain. I would give up on my cybernetic armor if I could be a daughter. If I had my mother and my codec, I would call her. I brought her at the altar, trying to bother God to talk with mama and my father. Yeah, I would give up on my cybernetic armor if I could be a daughter. If I had my mother and my codec, I would call her. I brought her at the altar, trying to bother God to talk with mama and my father. Yo, I miss you guys. I wish you were here. I wish you could see me now. I wish I could see you now.
Hello?
Hello?
On March 8th, CITR is celebrating International Women's Day with a full day of special programming. We've got 18 hours of female-centered content, 100% FemCon music from 6 a.m. to 12 p.m., a performance by Les Chaussettes at 6 p.m., a live broadcast from So Far Sounds show, and talk and documentaries about, by, and for self-identified women. Want to get involved? Contact Madeline at spokenword at citr.ca ASAP. Tune in this March 8th at citr.ca or on air at 101.9 FM. Welcome back, Lady Radio listeners. We are joined here today in studio by Andy Alvarez. She studies film production at UBC and is running for film liaison for the Film Society on campus. Woo, go Andy. We are also here with Dora, Elizabeth, Claire, and Paulina. She's there too. So yeah, since the beginning of film, narratives have been centered around the stories of men and specifically white men. And today, over 100 years after the birth of film, we are still faced with this problem of marginalized people not having a voice in film. So we kind of wanted to start discussing that today. I would like to start off with a question about like, have you guys seen the Oscars, and how do you feel about that? What were some problems with it? Just briefly, and then we can dive into other questions.
Well, I did see the Oscars. I think we were talking about this a bit before. I didn't get a chance to watch the whole thing. I only saw about a 15-minute excerpt. The only thing that really struck me, I've heard some people talk about the problematic aspects. I guess I didn't get to see those parts. But I really noticed, like, the 15 minutes I saw were just, like, very, very political, which I've, like, watched a couple Oscars ceremonies before, and I've never seen that, so I thought that was interesting.
I think that's something that I'm really happy that happened in these Oscars, especially with Chris Rock, him being a person of color and being one of the only people on stage who was a person of color, had the opportunity to be on stage for the Oscars, especially since all the nominees were mainly dominated by white people. So that being said, I feel like it's great that he targeted the controversy with all the nominations that went out. So I'm glad that it was political in that way. There may have been some lines that were overstepped, for sure, but I'm glad that that was brought up.
Yeah, I was pretty worried that it was going to be like the Academy would be like, we have a black host, like, we're done, we're diversified. And I was really happy that he, like, actually addressed it. Like, I was so worried he was just going to, like, he was going to be up there and act so normal. Like, it was, like, a normal, total, just, like, regular day. So I would, like... No, nothing's going to be perfect. Like, everyone's going to have different opinions on, like, how it was handled or whatever. But I'm just going to say, like, I'm really happy that it was addressed and, like, explicitly and, like, for extended period of time. I thought that was, like, really important.
Yeah, and I mean, this is the second year in a row that the hashtag Oscars So White has been trending. So obviously this isn't just a, yeah, it resurged this year.
The second year in a row? Mm-hmm. I didn't know. What the?
Yeah, it actually became Oscars, hashtag Oscars still so white. And that was a hashtag made by April Rain, like a black activist who made it last year. And I was like reading about her and she's really cool. So yeah, it's just interesting how there's this response happening to Hollywood cinema and Hollywood films just portraying white narratives and white male narratives. And it's like, that's not how we see our world. That's not, those are not the stories we see every day. How come those are the only ones that we're told?
Did you see Bette Midler's tweet?
Mm-mm.
Oh, Bette Midler. She tweeted something like, Oscars night tonight, or like, it's the Oscars. This is the year that where Leo is like on, what was it? Overdue, but black people can wait till next year. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Bette.
Thank you, Bette. I loved you in Beaches. Like, that was great.
One thing that was really interesting too is the way that the controversy was handled before the Oscars even happened, with like Jada Pinkett Smith like boycotting the Oscars and like encouraging everyone else to boycott it as well. And then I love that Chris Rock brought it up again in his opening monologue, and he was like, boycotting the Oscars is like boycotting Rihanna's panties. I wasn't invited. So it was just like, it was like, it's funny because it's also just like, it's true. To boycott something, it doesn't mean that you're like, you're going to stop it from now on, from it to happen in the future. You should instead talk about it and make people aware of it and be like, this is wrong. I want you to know that it's wrong.
Just like Rihanna's panties.
Well.
<Ooh.
laughs> No, I can't take it so. I love Rihanna. Panties are pretty.
But. it's also important to know, though, that, like, the Oscars is just, like, this kind of tip of the iceberg of Hollywood. Like, there's so much content being produced and created by marginalized people to, like, resist this white, cis, male narrative that's happening. And I think that's, like, really cool. And unfortunately, like, they're not making it up through those nominations. But there's still this, like, resilience that's happening in filmmaking. And because, like, pretty much anyone can create content, like, online. It's so easy to do. You have an iPhone, you have a small camera, like, you can, anyone can be a filmmaker. So I think people are really resisting, and I think that's interesting to see that happening.
Mm-hmm. And I totally see where it comes from, where, like, so many nominees are people not of color, because the people who are the ones make, or, like, nominating these people are actually, like, they're white, you know? Not, like, most of them, like, what is it, the people who vote for the nominees, like, are 70% of them are considered, like, white and over the age of 60 perhaps, and also male. So it just goes to show that not only is the content that we're showing with a lot of like Caucasian people, but it's also because it's produced by people who are white, So it's like the people who are on top are the ones that hold the power, and that's what they're like, they're producing this kind of show. And if we gave more opportunities to the people who like don't usually get those opportunities, we get to see more of what our world is really like, which is supposed to be, you know, diverse.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point, right? It's systemic, like all of this. There's no starting point where it happens. It just, we criticize the Oscars because they are the biggest representation of film that we can easily target. And it's a problem for sure, but I think it's happening everywhere. And something that Andy and I were talking about kind of before the show that's kind of interesting is how sometimes there will be actors cast in roles to maybe bring marginalized voices to the forefront, but they are cast for ethnicities other than what they actually are. Like you were talking about Nina.
Yeah, there's a new Nina trailer that came out starring Zoe Saldana. And basically, just looking at the trailer, I couldn't get through it myself, but they darkened her skin with makeup to make her look more like Nina Simone, because it's a biopic for Nina Simone. So I think I'm just frustrated that that role could have gone to someone who's actually of that skin color.
For example, Viola Davis would have been amazing in that role.
Yeah, totally agree.
And, like, what I think is so weird about it is that Zoe Saldana, like, is a person of color. She's Puerto Rican and from the Dominican Republic. And, like, the last thing I remember hearing about her is, like, her husband took her last name. Like, I think of her as, like, kind of like an icon for feminism and, like, actresses of color who, like, want to get out there and, like, have these opportunities. And then I just thought it was so counterintuitive to, like, accept this role and, like, commit in this really problematic way to the conversation.
Yeah, and it's really important to note that, like, it's not enough just to give or just to have people of color and, like, marginalized people and women in roles that don't necessarily reflect their identities. Like, that's not enough. We have to be careful because there's appropriation that's involved there. There's like, a lot of violence that can be done there. And obviously, like, this is one that's very problematic and we're talking a lot about. I know that we are a bit short on time here, so I kind of wanted to move on to another question on the more positive side. How, like, do you guys have any shows or films that you look up to in terms of, like femme content or like voices of marginalized people that are creating this kind of content and that are resisting this white male narrative? Like, yeah, like, do you guys have any examples of those?
I don't know if this is exactly like what you might be looking for, I guess, kind of, but I've recently saw Lost in Translation like a couple months ago. It's my new favorite movie. I thought it was so beautiful. I thought Scarlett Johansson's character was like a really like, yeah, she's living in Tokyo with her successful husband and she's young and beautiful and like living her life, but she's also like really unhappy. And I thought that was like a really important kind of like message to send. Like, there's like kind of layeredness and like women are complicated characters. But then also, like, obviously those were two white people, like her and Bill Murray were two white people in Japan. But then also I really liked how Sofia Coppola put Scarlett Johansson like and showed her exploring like Japanese culture, and like Japanese culture itself was like a really big part of the film. And just like her as a foreigner, Scarlett Johansson's character engaging with the culture, I thought was super interesting. And I didn't, maybe just because I am a white female, so I was like, oh, white female. But it didn't really seem like appropriation. It just seemed like her like actually just like observing and trying to understand it, which I think is like the only way you can really do it.
One person for me that really hits the nail on the head for this is Shonda Rhimes. This woman is like a thunderstorm. She, as soon as she started, she created Grey's Anatomy, making sure that all the protagonists in the show are as diverse as they possibly can be. She's got from all different kinds of ethnicities on all her shows. She's had Grey's Anatomy, Scandal, her new show called The Catch, and she just came out with How to Get Away with Murder. Like, this woman is, she owns pretty much ABC right now. Like, all her shows are on that network. So she's pretty much like made headway for all the people who are like, all, especially women and women of color who want to be filmmakers and also work in film. And she's made stories about women starting from the bottom and going to the top as well.
Elizabeth or Claire, do you guys have any in mind that? No, I was recently listening to a panel about trans stories, and this this woman who was speaking, she is a co-writer slash I think like initially developed the idea to this web series called Her Story. And it's all about kind of trans experiences, about coming out to partners, or just kind of developing their identities of who they're. I don't feel like I am the right person to speak to this, but I just found it really interesting because she was saying it's one of the very few slash maybe the only written by a trans person about trans people web series. So things like that, I think it's so interesting that there's this kind of resistance coming out against this narrative of like white male centric stories in film. And I think we might see like a resurgence of a lot of really cool things coming out.
And like screen media on the internet is also like such a powerful and accessible way to like get your content out there and get your story out there. I don't know like a lot about it. I'm not too into like the YouTube. That's like the first thing I think of. But like I can imagine like on YouTube there must be at least one channel that's like kind of dedicated to getting one person's story out there, and like even like vlogs. Like it's just like. This is an easily accessible and like easy way of sharing content.
Yeah, I think what Zoe brought up early is really interesting too, because like for example, a show like Orange Is the New Black, to have that show being written by older Caucasian men, you know, who've never either been or visited a prison, to talk like create characters like Pusey and like even the male guards and things like that, like. All those characters have different personalities, and like there's transgendered personalities, there are lesbian personalities, there's so many personalities that like to be able to write those stories and that kind of language comes best from the people who have experienced it like that, you know? So I feel like that's why that show is also so successful, to create content from like experiences as well as you know how that story should be told because you've experienced it yourself.
And I think one of the things about that for me is like, honestly, at this point, like, you know, like you said, 100 years after the birth of Hollywood and like the popularization of film, like, why would we settle for anything less? Like, it's just boring. Like, we've seen the same stories mm-hmm. that present like extraordinarily limited views of a ridiculously narrowed idea of like the people that live in our world for so long. It's like, yeah, I've seen enough. Like, why would we settle for that still? Which is why I think shows like Orange Is the New Black, like people want to watch that because mm-hmm. it's a more accurate and like interesting and nuanced representation of the world in which we live, and like just mm-hmm. which yeah. like makes me angry.
Yeah, and like I think like as problematic as she may be, like Lena Dunham is doing some really incredible things, like for women specifically in film. Like I think her show Girls can be kind of ridiculous and over the top, but it was this really cool initiative to give women voices in TV series and in film. And although it is very like white centric and like it's about all these girls living with a lot of money in New York, like there's something to be said about like not giving much screen time to men. And what does that say about how we as women view that series and how we identify with it and maybe give ourselves value and see the like the realism in it in a sense?
And I think that's like especially important like on a platform that is HBO, which is like such like a male dominant. Oh, which is such a male centric dominated platform. And the fact that they just like gave it to a woman and like this group of women is also really telling like of like maybe the hopefulness and like opportunities that are out there for women in film.
Totally. Yeah. I think that's a good place to end us off there, Dora. Cool. Yeah, I think a couple announcements here before we sign off. Thank you guys for that discussion. I think that was really fruitful. Obviously 15 minutes is not enough time to talk about women in film. But we had a lot of good points, so thank you to everyone. Just a couple announcements here. There's the Fun Drive finale tonight at the Hindenburg, which starts at
8 o'clock.
8 o'clock,
I believe. Yes, it's $12 at the door. We have a huge silent auction. There are a ton of bands playing. Aura Kogan, Late Spring is going to be there. Stefano Fratilla is going to be there. I'm going to be there. A whole bunch of us are going to be there. And it's it's a co-party for the end of Fun Drive and also the release of our fourth Pop Alliance compilation with Mint Records. So come by and get those. They're limited edition, limited stock, $15 each. Really great album of a whole bunch of top CITR charting artists. It's going to be a crazy time.
It's going to be a fun time. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be there. Dora's going to be there.
So you know it's popping.
Uh-huh.
We also have International Women in Film is doing a festival next week, starting on International Women's Day. So it's the March 8th through the 13th, screening lots of really cool films directed by women, produced by women, with leading women actresses, lots of different content. If you want to check that out a bit more, you can go to www.womeninfilm.ca and check out their schedule, but I highly recommend it. And Elizabeth, do you want to tell us a bit about International Women's Day?
Yes. So just mentioned, International Women's Day is on Tuesday. We are doing an entire day of entirely female content. So 6 a.m. to midnight, we're going to be doing 18 hours straight FemCon. A whole bunch of the ladies in the room right now are going to be taking on an hour of programming and doing some cool stuff. We're going to have talk and documentaries by, for, and about self-identified women. We are doing a in-studio set at 6 p.m. Les Shaw set is going to be here. They're really awesome local band, and then also at from 8 to 9:30 we're doing a live broadcast of the So Far Sounds International Women's Day show. Zoe's gonna be emceeing. Woo! It's gonna be crazy, so tune in any point 6 a.m. to midnight for the whole thing if you want. It's gonna be very exciting. Center in Women's Voices, which is what we're all about.
Woot woot. Great. I think that's our show for tonight. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Do we have a song?
Yeah.
Do we have a song to end us off?
We have Who Know Dat, produced by Waves, but performed and written by Layla Hendricks, a Toronto-based MC. It's pretty dope. So,
join us next week. We're going to be having an episode all about women and tattoos, including an interview with Allison Woodward, who works at the Fall Tattooing. So make sure to tune in for that. Friday night, 6 p.m. We'll be here. See you there. Have a great week.
Hold it down, you know that. And you know I won't mess around, you know that. And if I ever hold it down, you know that. I look at them, you know they switch up on their friends, you know that. And yeah, they won't stick to the end, you know that. And yeah, they always gon' pretend, you know that. I patiently waiting, but you see I'm losing patience, and see this money I'm chasing, and you can be motivation, cause baby, I just have faith in you, and I ain't gon' play with you, cause you keep the 99, and I'm just one more than you, but they lie to daddy, don't know how to party, cause they know we on it, gin with the tonic, and baby, I'm more than you want, you're really all that I have, I'll give you all that you want, better than all that you have. And you know I'm gonna hold you down, you know that. And you know I won't play around, you know that. And I'll forever hold you down, you know that. You don't even need them, and I don't need them either. But they talk, always talking, speaking nonsense. What you need from me, cause I ain't got shit for you.
Oh, no, no,
but who
no.
said I run my mouth,
oh, no, no,
cause I don't ever talk about you.
I don't.
Now you wanna hold me down,
no.
And now you wanna call me lying,
my
cause you see that I'm on the grind, but you know that it's all the time. I look at that, and you know I'm gon' hold it down, you know that. And you know I won't play around, you know that. And I'll forever hold it down, you know.
Them.
You know they switch up on their friends, you know them. You know they won't stick to the end, you know them. And you know they always gon' pretend, you know that, babe. Oh, you know that, oh, you know that. You know that.